KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Common Core represents a major shift in what teachers teach and what students learn, and the first major test involving Common Core is now underway, literally. That's because starting yesterday, millions of California school children began taking tests that will assess not so much whether they know the right answers, but whether the test is asking the right questions and whether schools have the right technology to implement the reforms. Is California ready for Common Core and the changes it will bring to our schools? That's our focus next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, in today for Michael Krasny. Common Core. Two words that define perhaps the biggest shift in direction for America's schools in decades. Common Core attempts to do exactly what the name implies, establish common educational standards across state lines, standards that are aimed at developing certain core principles, deeper student learning, more emphasis on writing skills, understanding of mathematical concepts, problem solving, and so forth. Yesterday, California students entered the approach ramp to Common Core by taking the first Common Core test. But what's really being tested isn't the kids so much as the test itself, to see if California has the right testing process in place before going full speed ahead, a process that's proved plenty bumpy in other states around the country. And so in this hour forum, we want to take up whether or not California is ready for Common Core and whether or not that reform indeed represents a bold new direction for California schools. Joining us, Kathy Barron. She's a reporter for EdSource Today, which is an education news organization. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us as well is Michael Kirst, who is president of the California State Board of Education, professor emeritus as well at the School of Education at Stanford University. Mike Kirst, good morning.
Pleasure to be here.
Happy to have you join us. And Stan Karp joins us as well. He's director of the Secondary Reform Project at the New Jersey Education Law Center, which is a nonprofit firm covering educational issues, also edits Rethinking Schools, a magazine for educators. Stan Karp, good morning as well.
Thank you.
A little bit later in our program, we'll also hear from some other voices on this, including administrators and California school teachers. Kathy Barron, first, give us, if you can, a little bit of a primer on Common Core. We hear so much about it, and you heard my brief description of it. But in essence, what is it trying to accomplish?
It's trying to create standards that will help students prepare for critical thinking, problem solving, and more analysis of issues rather than rote memorization.
So, Mike Kirst, is it the focus then on really giving students certain skills that will be broadly applicable as opposed to just learning the right answer to the right question?
Yeah, let me portray some verbs that are in the Common Core. Just read them to give you an idea. Derive, assess, construct, interpret, estimate, summarize, and apply your learning to a wide range of real-world problems. So it's much more than we currently do, which was to essentially not do a lot of assessment, for example, that went beyond multiple-choice questions with four or five options. The new assessments will require students to write in part of their answers on a computer. And they'll also have performance exams, which is sort of like the behind-the-wheel test you take as a driver to get the license. So these will give them an issue like nuclear power and some sources and say, analyze these, put these together, make your own judgments, but justify them with the facts and with what you've read in the various readings.
And how would you place it, Mike, within your career in education, which spans 50 years, I know, how significant would you place this effort?
Well, educators have been talking about this kind of curriculum for decades, and we've never been able to really implement it. So I think we're right in this program of saying, can we get from here to there? This is a huge lift. But these standards are fewer. Our curriculum used to be a mile wide and an inch deep, treating topics in very little depth. Deeper, as we've indicated in these comments, and they are aligned more with post-secondary education. In the past, the K-12 curriculum was not that well aligned, particularly with the less selective areas of post-secondary education. It's also aligned with career and technical education or anything students need to do beyond high school.
And Stan Karp, how would you make that assessment? Would you agree that this gets us deeper and less thin than our current standards?
Well, I think what we have here is an attempt to create national standards and assessments that is running into contentious debate on three counts. One, some concerns about the process by which they were developed and adopted. Two, concerns about the assessments that the tests coming down the road that you're talking about today in California, promoting the overuse and the misuse of standardized tests. And third, concerns about the way that the Common Core standards are being introduced into this larger context of a very polarized education debate about evaluating teachers, about equitable school funding, about the growth of privatized charter schools. So it's not only the standards, it's also the context in which they're being introduced that's at contention.
Well, that segues into all of the various controversies that are associated with this, Kathy Barron, and it has proved bumpy elsewhere. In New York State, for example, there have been a lot of bumps. Has that been because they were pushed too fast, too quickly, that they were aligned, as Stan Karp is suggesting, with, well, let's use this as a way of evaluating teachers? What's gone on that has been amiss elsewhere that California might be able to learn from?
It's funny. Usually in the past years, you would hear experts say, when you look at California in terms of education in the past 10 years, we're the case study of how not to do it. This time it's actually New York that's the case study of how not to do it. New York implemented them very quickly, wasn't fully implemented before they gave the test a year ago, and they made the test count. So scores were abysmal. Two-thirds of the kids failed. Parents went ballistic. And now, just this week, they are debating a three-year moratorium on it.
So explain the difference again. I mentioned it in the introduction, but the test that kids started taking here in California starting yesterday and will be continuing to take in the weeks ahead, it doesn't count in terms of how kids are evaluated, how teachers are evaluated. It's really about getting the test right?
Yeah, they say this is the test of the test. It's the smarter, balanced assessment, which is supposed to be aligned to Common Core standards. This year is the field test year. So they're testing a couple of things. The two big ones are the validity of the questions, and the second one is the technology, because it's a computer-based exam.
And which gets us into a whole other area of whether or not schools have the right technology and whether kids have enough technological practice to be able to conduct it. But let's place that on hold for a moment, because I want to ask you, Mike Kirst, about your experience in this as president of the State Board of Education and pushing for this idea of testing the test. Because as I understand it, that wasn't necessarily something that the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, was too thrilled about your wanting to do.
Yes, he threatened the state in a letter with withholding $3.5 billion in federal funds if we didn't give our old test called the STAR testing system or the California Standards Test. Our view was that, yes, teachers need to be ready for this. And also, we don't know what our technological capability is across this vast state. So we wanted to stress the system with this field test of the new assessment. And initially, the secretary didn't like it, and then we negotiated with him, and in the end, he approved it. So all's well that ends well.
And Stan Karp, is that the kind of thing that you're at least, even though I know you have various reservations and concerns about this being a national effort, in that sense, is California going about this in the right way?
Yeah, I think the waiver that California got to try to at least get some breathing room to implement this without the same high-stakes consequences that are raising concern elsewhere is very much the right direction. But it also reflects, again, the context that this came out of. This, you know, the Common Core project started after we had 10 years of No Child Left Behind. And what No Child Left Behind had done has generated a tremendous increase in the use of assessment to make high-stakes decisions about schools and the people who work in them. We used to test kids once in elementary school, once in middle school, once in high school. But since NCLB was passed in 2002, you're testing every kid every year in every grade from 3 to 8, and then you're using these tests to make very high-stakes decisions. So at the end of 10 years, you had a lot of problems with No Child Left Behind that were changed with the NCLB waivers and the kinds of things that you've been talking about. But we really need a change in that federal mandate so that the all concerns about the over-testing and the rate at which these tests are being implemented and used really has some more breathing room, and those decisions can get made closer to schools and closer to local districts where they have the largest consequences.
Well, there are two interesting parts of that observation, I think, Mike Kirst. The first is it does seem in some ways a bit contradictory that if what the purpose of Common Core is to get students into this deeper mode of learning, the ability to problem solve, to assess, as you were describing, but then the way of testing that is through another standardized test. Don't those kind of smack up against each other a little bit?
Well, let me say from the first point that since Governor Brown came into office 2011, the state of California has cut testing time by over 50%. So we have eliminated numerous tests, including those in second grade, ninth and tenth grade. We have cut a bunch of tests that were not well designed in biology, chemistry, world history, and so on. So we are, I think, the overall testing burden will be going down, and California, I think, will be benefiting from that. I think that people have to suspend judgment till they see what this new assessment is. There's an old saying, it isn't a bad thing to teach to a good test. I'm a college professor at Stanford, and I like my assessments. They weren't standardized. We're trying to move away from the old vision of what assessment is. We believe these new assessments can help improve instruction. And they're not just end of core of checkups to hold people accountable and find good schools and bad schools and good teachers and bad teachers. So I think that we're entering a new era. There will be computer adaptive. That means if you're answering questions easily, the computer makes the questions harder and vice versa. So we're entering some new concepts here, and people are carrying around the old baggage of the bubble in test. I would add that the new PSAT announced by the College Board is compatible with Common Core, and all of higher education is moving to these assessments. ACT will come out with a new assessment in 2014. And so we're really at a point of change in our thinking and style of assessment.
Kathy Barron, place that in a little more context, because, you know, teaching to the test is such a mantra that you so often hear from teachers, that it's their central complaint in all of this is that they spend all their time trying to get their kids ready to take tests as opposed to really getting their kids ready.
That's one of the things that Smarter Balanced, well, actually the Common Core standards, is supposed to address, which is that students are learning more how to problem solve, how to think through problems, and the test itself should actually look at that. So as Mike said early on, the Smarter Balanced test is, it has some multiple choice. It has fill in the blank. It has essays. It has reading comprehension. It has movable interactive graphs in the math part of it. It has students watch a video on one side and answer questions on another side. Short answer, one paragraph responses. And the most interesting thing, which he talked about, this performance assessment, where the teachers in a class the day before the test will actually do a half-hour lesson with the students on a certain topic based on their grade. The next day, they'll take a test that will ask them to use that information and answer some questions.
So it's that idea again of taking something out for a test drive and, mm-hmm. and really getting a sense of whether or not they can problem solve and take things in conceptually. Let's get a sense now of how ready schools are for all of this. We're joined next by Kimberly Rodriguez, who is the legislative advocate for the Association of California School Administrators, and she helped develop a survey for school administrators about whether or not the schools were ready, whether they had the right technology in place, because as we've already been hearing, schools have to have a certain sort of technological infrastructure in order for their students to be able to take the test. Kimberly Rodriguez, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Give us your quick snapshot of what you learned in this survey. Are California schools ready? Do teachers feel ready? Do administrators feel ready to put this in place?
Well, I think they feel ready to do the field test for the most part, which is actually, the window started yesterday and it's through June 6th. So they really geared up to purchase hardware and software to be able to do that, and also to make sure they had enough internet bandwidth to conduct the necessary test. But I will say that it's varied across the state. I mean, we heard from some of our members very up north that they don't really have internet access, so they're going to bus their children to the County Office of Education to administer the test. We've also heard of some issues related to districts have enough capacity to administer the field test in terms of the internet bandwidth, but maybe not necessarily running the day-to-day operations of their district with their computers.
And what about the number, whether or not they have enough keyboards in the classroom and whether or not they feel like their students have enough practice at that, have tablets at home so that they're not coming to this for the first time the day they take the test?
I think they feel like they have enough to complete the field test. Now, that means that not everyone is on a one-to-one ratio by any means. So they're either having technology on carts that they're bringing a classroom and having certain students use it at a certain time and then transferring it to other students another time, or in and out of computer labs. So some districts are on a one-to-one ratio, but many others aren't.
And is the relationship that you found, is it geographic? You mentioned schools up in Northern California. Is this a rural versus urban? Is it rich versus poor? Describe sort of where you're finding the problems.
I think in terms of the infrastructure access, it's a statewide issue, because even if they're connected to the California high-speed network, depending on the portal they're accessing, it depends on how much bandwidth they have. So, yes, it's probably more acute in the rural parts of the state, and that just doesn't mean up north. It could mean some parts of the Central Valley. It could also mean some parts of the Inland Empire and the desert. But I would say that urban school districts are having some bandwidth issues as well. It's not just related to the very isolated parts of the state.
And what about, you would assume, but I don't know if this is true, I'd be interested in knowing about whether there's a disparity in terms of wealth. In other words, how does South Central LA compare to Menlo Park?
We haven't actually gotten into that question. I think it's an issue of how many devices they have, and they want to go to one-to-one, but the resources necessarily aren't there. We have a new funding formula that's coming out with LCFF that, you know, provides more funding to low-income students, English learners, and foster kids. So that just rolled out this year. So, you know, we don't know the effects of that for a few more years. But our members have very much said that technology is a priority, and they don't want to just use whatever devices they've bought to implement the test once a year. They want to integrate this technology in the instructional day of students.
Kimberly Rodriguez, the legislative advocate for the Association of California School Administrators. Thanks so much for giving us your ground-level view of how schools are contending with this around the state.
Thank you.
Stan Karp, as you heard Kimberly Rodriguez review that, does that get at some of your does that speak to some of your concerns, I guess, that the experience of this is necessarily going to be varied when you want it to be more constant?
Well, I think the variation is not in itself a problem, except it raises questions about the comparability of the scores, across very different testing situations. You know, for the most part, the most reliable standardized test that we have is the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which, again, doesn't test every kid every year, but uses sampling techniques, but uses them under very controlled, similar conditions. So here, again, there's an experiment about the test, and it's good that California is doing the experimenting in this space. But the larger issue about talking about tests that have to be given on computers many schools don't have is that the whole standards themselves, you know, not only the tests, but the standards themselves have not been adequately tied to the resources necessary to deliver them. The standards, you know, require well-prepared, supported professional staff, all sorts of instructional resources. And we're in a situation where 34 of the 50 states are spending less on education than they were 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And if you're proposing a really dramatic increase in outcomes and performance to reach goals that we've never reached before, in this case, making every kid college and career ready, and your primary investments are in standards and tests that are mostly going to show you how far we are from reaching those goals, it's not a very good plan, or you're planning something else.
Mike Kirst, on that latter point first, about whether or not we're in some ways, you know, doing a little bit of cart before the horse, that we're trying to assess something that we don't really have the resources to support. And then I'd also like to get your view on the concern about the variation around the state.
Yes. Well, we're planning. This is a long-term effort. I mean, this is the first year of a long-year journey. I think, to be frank, we are expecting full implementation of the Common Core, maybe 4 years out, maybe five. So California, unlike New York, is phasing this in a sensible way. And I concur with Mr. Karp's comments on the context, so we're not really arguing about that. So what we're talking about is how do we get from here to there. So the California plan is to phase this in gradually. This year's a field test. Next year, the assessment will be a baseline. So it'll just measure where you were at the beginning. And then we'll be assessing change from the baseline, which we expect to be pretty low because these are newer, higher standards for students. Moreover, I agree with these comments that we need a lot of resources into professional development of teachers and new materials. Most schools don't have these yet. The legislature appropriated with the governor $1.25 billion just for Common Core last year as an added part. We're increasing the general funds. I think there'll be more funds for Common Core in the future. And so we're looking at this as a sensible rollout. Where is the capacity of the system to implement Common Core? And we're making adjustments at the state level. So we're not rushing in saying you have to evaluate your teachers immediately on the Common Core standards right. The way New York is.
And Kathy Barron, how does that square with your reporting on this about the degree of flexibility and about handling the variation within the state?
Well, the Kimberly's organization, the Association for California School Administrators, had in that survey that they did, one thing that they found was about half, well, maybe a little over half of the people who responded from the districts said that a major concern of theirs is being able to have the technology to continue to embed it in education and to provide professional development for teachers so that they know how to use technology in the classroom effectively, efficiently, and to improve lessons instead of just having computers. They're asking actually for about another $3 billion in one-time funding to continue that implementation. Susan Bonilla, a state assemblywoman, has introduced a bill that would provide maybe about $1.5 billion. AXA says they need more than that. And they said that by the overwhelming concern among the superintendents was this technological professional development, that would be the crucial thing.
We'll take up more on this topic. Is California ready for Common Core? Are teachers ready? Are students ready? What will it mean for our state and for our schools and for society at large when we come back after this short break? And we'd love to have you join our conversation. What do you think about Common Core? What are you hearing at your school if you're a parent? What are your teachers of your children saying to you? We'd love to have you join our conversation at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kcal.org. at kqed.org or post your thoughts on our Facebook page or website as well. We'll hear from all of you, teachers as well, when we return. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. What's coming up on Forum in our second hour this morning? How much can the story of one building tell us about the rich and varied history of San Francisco? We'll discuss the evolution and past inhabitants of San Francisco's landmark high-rise, 140 New Montgomery. The early skyscraper, constructed in 1925, once served as the headquarters of the Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company, and now it houses Yelp. We'll talk about that history in our second hour. And for a future Forum program in our Priced Out series, we'd like to hear from people who managed to stay afloat in the Bay Area on an income of less than $33,000 a year. Tell us your story at kqed.org/forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in today for Michael Krasny. Our topic this hour, the approach of Common Core. Students around the state of California yesterday started taking a test of the test to figure out whether or not California is ready to go down this new road. And in this hour of Forum, we're talking about what those Common Core standards are, what they will mean for California's teachers and students, and whether or not the state is indeed ready to assess whether or not that direction is the right one or whether it represents a kind of blind alley of educational reform. We'd love to have you join us as well. 866-733-6786 is our number. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. Our guests include Kathy Barron, reporter for EdSource Today, Mike Kurse, president of the California State Board of Education, and Stan Karp, director of the Secondary Reform Project at New Jersey's Education Law Center. And we're also joined as well now by Eric Hines, who's vice president of the California Teachers Association and a fourth grade teacher at Willow Cove Elementary in the Pittsburgh Unified School District in the East Bay. Mr. Hines, thanks for taking time out to join us this morning.
Oh, thank you very much.
So what's your feeling, I guess? I'd really love to know just what your sense of this process is at this point. I don't know if kids in your school have started taking the test of the test yet, but what's your sense of things? Are you ready? What are your fellow teachers, what are they saying about the readiness for undertaking Common Core?
Well, I think what we're experiencing in California around Common Core, like much of the nation, is kind of like a Common Core Wild West. It's a very chaotic situation, and people are kind of all over the place. It's important when we talk about the core that we separate the standards from how the curriculum and how it's being implemented from the assessments. And when we look at just the standards themselves, that most teachers actually like them. We've been coming off of 15 years of these California, the so-called world-class standards, when they were so many of them and they were so broad and so prescriptive that these standards are really a welcome change. And it's really what many teachers have been doing in their classroom because they focus on critical thinking and problem-solving skills. The problem comes in the implementation. At least what we found out is that at least 7 out of 10 teachers nationally find that the implementation has been, chaotic at best. And we have in California, we just adopted the math framework and adopted 31 different math textbooks just this last year. And the English Language Arts framework hasn't even been adopted yet, and we don't expect the textbooks to be approved until 2015. And even the textbooks that have been approved in the math, when we looked at them really closely, and a lot of the teachers across the state, we've been sharing it with them as long, when they were approved by the board. Some of them seemed like the old textbooks with a few changes, put Common Core on the cover, and then they slapped it on and resold it to the state. But it's just a chaotic situation.
So is your feeling, Mr. Hines, that while the goal is right, you're being asked to do something that really you really aren't in a situation to do. So would you like to see the implementation delayed? What would you like to see Mike Kurse, who's on the line with you, the president of the State Board of Education, do?
Well, we'd like them to do it, and actually, you know, California has done some things right in this case. You know, when the governor signed AB 484, you know, putting a 3-year moratorium on the high stakes testing on the high stakes testing piece, that I think that was a good step, because it allows us now to take the time to do the field testing and all of that. And I think we're moving in the right direction to do the right order. We just need to make sure we're doing it intentionally and getting the frameworks and the curriculum in place, and then worry really about what we're assessing. And then we also need to focus a lot on the professional development of teachers, on how to teach this. And again, we've been coming off of 15 years of No Child Left Behind, which was scripted curriculum, top-down, one-size-fits-all, and this is almost exactly the opposite of that.
Yeah. Eric Hines, thanks so much. If you can, stay with us. I know you may have to run back to your classroom, so I don't want to get in the way of actual classroom teaching.
Well, I'm actually not in my classroom now. I'm actually on leave to be vice president.
Okay,
so
all right. Then stay with us. And Mike Kersa, speak back, if you would, to Eric Hines and the real concerns. You can hear him attest to the value of these standards, but of course, great worry about the implementation.
Well, again, it's going to take time, and it's going to take resources. And I'm concerned in many ways as he is. We have 320,000 teachers in California, 6.2 million students, and over 11,000 schools. And so the resources you need to prepare educators for this switch, which he described well, are significant. And we need to provide those resources. And if we can't do it real fast, we need to make the rollout a little slower. Now, we can measure progress in many ways, and we need to do it through surveys with teachers and parents. And we also need to get the parents better informed and behind this. We're coming out with some more communication programs now, but every survey shows that parents don't know much at all about the Common Core, and that's another issue that we're facing. So this is a big, big idea to move education into the 21st century. A lot of it was inherited from the 19th century, and it isn't going to be easy, and it isn't going to be that quick, and there'll be trade-offs. We would like to know more about how our schools are doing, but we do have a moratorium on assessment while we roll in this the Common Core. And so there are trade-offs, and so in some ways, no pain, no gain. And we're embarked on a process that I think the state is heavily behind. Many other states have had strong opposition, particularly from the Tea Party, but the Republican Party in California at their convention passed a resolution opposing the Common Core. So at this point, however, the opposition is relatively weak, and we've got a lot of enthusiasm and momentum.
Let's hear from our listeners and start out with Gwendolyn in San Francisco. Gwendolyn, go ahead, please. What do you think of all this?
Hi, I'm a teacher for San Francisco. I used to work for San Francisco Unified, and I was the computer teacher, William Diavola on H Street. And the parents, this is how bad things were, had to wire the school so we could have internet access. Then my job was consolidated, and I went to a middle school, and I taught, and the computers were refurbished by prisoners from Lompoc Prison, and they were old compacts. So I just don't think that San Francisco is ready for technology, and they cut that job out. They cut all the computer jobs out to align themselves with the No Child Left Behind Act, brought reading teachers in. Another thing I'm suspicious of is Pearson is handling this test. Pearson has brought, you know, most of the curriculum is done by Pearson. So those two issues, are we ready, technology, and also why does Pearson have the monopoly?
All right, let's see if we can get some reaction. Test. We'll get some reaction to that, Gwendolyn. Thanks for joining us. On the last point, Kathy Barron, are you familiar with the Pearson reference? Help me understand that.
I actually think Mike could be better on that.
Okay, Mike Kirst.
Yeah, I don't know any involvement of Pearson in design of the curriculum. They did work on the New York State one, perhaps, I think so. But they are not heavily involved here at all. We work with a 23-state consortium called Smarter Balanced on the assessment. It's It's not with any. It's a nonprofit. It's going to go to UCLA shortly. And so Pearson's just one of many vendors in this state. The computers, we had the $1.25 billion that was provided over this school year, that a lot of that has gone into technology. So I talked to San Francisco, and they say they're confident that they can do this field test. So we'll see. It's all everybody's guess now.
We
deliberately stressed the system to find out whether the computers are there.
It's you know, there's an old saying, Mike, that this reminds me of a bit. It's a little bit like saying, you know, ready, fire, aim. I mean, right? I mean, you're sort of launching because you got to launch, and then you're going to kind of refine the aim as you go.
Yeah, I think that the aim is the Common Core standard, so we know where we're aiming, and then the curriculum and the assessments that are part of that. So, but it's really much more make mid-course and short-term corrections, get good information on where things are going, try to adapt. So on this field test, we have call centers and firefighters literally all over the state. By firefighters, I mean the Educational Testing Services has a group that in all over the state that can come out and help. So we're ready for blow-ups, if you will, and trying to avoid Obamacare.
I was just going to say that. I wish they'd talk to you before the rollout of Obamacare. Let's go to Ben next in Oakland. Ben, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Ben Cornell, and I'm COO of Envision Schools in Oakland. A lot of criticism of standardized tests has to do with bias toward low-income or English language learner families or minority groups. And the Smarter Balanced Assessment, number one, I'm a big fan of Common Core, but the Smarter Balanced Assessment requires advanced critical thinking and also technology skills. And I was wondering if the panelists could comment on whether they think this Smarter Balanced Assessment and the implementation of it will eliminate bias or might create more bias, and what they're doing in implementation to mitigate that.
Ben, thank you. It's a key question. Another listener asked the same question about whether or not how this will affect Latino students, who are now 50% of all students around the state. Stan Karp, take that first. What's your view on how this will impact either English language learners or kids who come from more disadvantaged backgrounds?
Well, I think there's a lot of concerns, and one of the things that the field test is supposed to check is, you know, to what extent are the accommodations that are traditionally provided to disabled students or low-income students or ELL students, whether or not they will be appropriately used, and also what the different cultural capital and experience students will bring to a computerized testing service how that will affect the outcome. I think a lot of the questions that you're talking about reflect the fact that educators, both, you know, school boards and educators and parents, we're not at the center of the development of the standards or the tests. And so now that it was mostly very much companies like Pearson and ETS and McGraw-Hill, test publishers and test makers at the center of that process. And now the problems of having that process developed top-down and now rolled out is what educators and parents are running into.
Eric Hines, you come from you're teaching at a district with a lot of diversity in Pittsburgh. What's your sense of that? What are your concerns about how kids who are perhaps English language learners or coming from different backgrounds will fare with this new process?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. If we're going to the testing itself and Smarter Balance and all of that as it begins to be field tested, you know, this year and over the next couple of years, we may find that it becomes, you know, it could be a Trojan horse. You know, we don't know. We need to find out about that, which is why giving a 3-year moratorium on the high stakes of the testing is a good idea. One of the things that educators fear, because of the experience with No Child Left Behind, is that the testing begins to drive the actual teaching and learning, as opposed to the other way around and informing the teaching and learning. We may find that 3 years in implementing Smarter Balance is not enough, because there's other things, keyboarding skills and you know, all these other kinds of things that are involved in the test. But we need to do it in the right order. We need to make sure that the curriculum and the professional development is in place first, so that the kids are being taught the right standards, and then make sure that we're assessing them appropriately in a way that actually informs the teaching and the learning.
Some comments coming in from our listeners. Tracy writes, the new assessment is a huge step up from the horrendous bubble-in assessments. Those are just the fill-in-the-marks. She goes on to say, we have good technology resources in our elementary school thanks to our PTA, but we're aware that both the nature of the content and the technical skills that will be needed to carry out the new tests will prove challenging for teachers and students alike. It's an interesting reference, Kathy Barron, to the PTA, because we do see whether they're PTAs or school foundations at well-to-do districts, you have to think that they're just going to be in better shape in terms of the kind of equipment that they have available for their kids.
Absolutely. And Wes Smith, who is the executive director of the Association for California School Administrators, told me a couple of weeks ago that's a huge concern of theirs and that it could, in fact, be he sees it could be a huge civil rights issue.
How do you react to that, Mike Hurst?
Well, I think that the testing is really the least of the issues. I think you can do technical fixes for that, but you know, the issue on English learners, we need much better skills of teachers to enable them to move quickly into the English language arts that we're envisioning here. So I think these are real challenges. And we're aware of them and trying to stay abreast of them and then make fixes and strategies to deal with them. I mean, it's raising the bar, and some kids weren't at the lower bar, and so now if to get them even higher, we have good strategies on paper. The key issue is whether our classroom teachers and our principals are prepared to implement those.
Watching it. Let me ask you, Mike, to take off your school president of the school board of education hat for a moment and put back on your professorial cap and gown, because doesn't this also mean that schools of education like yours at Stanford have to change too, that you have to now implement a different way of preparing teachers?
Right. That's another critical issue, and that has been in some of the institutions of higher education that prepare teachers, and there are many here, you know, in the state that do it. They're really going to have to rethink their situation and how they implement it. So all these pieces, what we're getting at here is a whole lot of pieces have to come together to implement this well. We can get the policies right and the standards right, but the pieces have to come together in the classroom in terms of initial preparation of teachers by colleges, professional development, technology, materials. So it's I wrote an article saying Common Core, it changes almost everything in schools and in education policy. So that's why it's so dramatic. But we're not naive about this, and we realize it will be hard and take time.
To our next caller, Anthony joins us in Willits. Anthony, go ahead.
Well, I think what Mr. Kirsch just said is right. We're not naive about this. Those of us who have been educators during No Child Left Behind have seen high-poverty schools really be set up for failure. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen again. More than three-fourths of English learners in New York failed the Common Core test. And in California, a lot of our schools have 50% or more of their students are English learners. Teachers that I've spoken to that have tried out the trial test, I spoke with the second grade teacher who said that her English learners just looked at the questions and couldn't even really begin to answer. And so I'm afraid that we're getting into this situation where we're going to have a refreshment of the indictment of public schools, where our schools are being set up to be labeled as failures.
Right. Anthony, thank you for raising that. And it Bob also raises this question. So let's go around on this once about Bob writes, what's the difference? I thought we were trying to get away from No Child Left Behind. How is Common Core any different than that? And I do think there does seem to be some concern about that. We heard earlier about how these standards are deeper and ask different things of students than the No Child Left Behind standards, and that we're reaching for a way that will train kids to have different kinds of assessment skills and conceptual and problem-solving skills. But there's worry that this will just take us down that same path again. Is that part of your concern, Stan Karp?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that No Child Left Behind showed is that federal policy based on mandating standards and tests as main tools in school improvement does not work. And it's really stunning that we are repeating this with another set of standards and another set of tests rather than attacking the inequality of the school funding that we've referred to, the inequality that surrounds all our schools, the concentrated poverty and segregation that remains the fundamental problem in public education. And it also would make more sense to invest in universal high-quality pre-K at the beginning of school readiness rather than tests at the end of school
but
readiness.
But wouldn't you agree, Stankarp, that the standards are very different than No Child Left Behind, and the test itself is trying to get at different things? So they're not the same in that sense, right?
Well, the standards are very different, mostly by the process by which they've been created. For example, in New Jersey, we've had very credible standards for almost two decades. But those standards were developed by educators and stakeholders in the state. So by the time they were actually implemented and assessed, there was a high degree of buy-in. There was a high degree of curriculum work that had been done. This is all being done on the fly for policy reasons. And it is causing a lot of difficulties. And it is, as the caller just said, setting up schools for another round of you know, low test scores and failure that kind of undermines the common ground that public education needs to thrive.
Kathy Barron, I don't want to go, because we have not much time remaining, too deeply into this, but part of the concern that Stankarp is speaking to is that these standards were developed, if not in secret, but in a sort of closed doorway, and that there wasn't enough involvement in educators in their creation. Can you give us any sense of what that background is?
They were developed starting in about 2009, and in part it was because No Child Left Behind could not be reauthorized, so that was sort of going nowhere. People, teachers in particular, hated No Child Left Behind. It was definitely a huge coming together of lawmakers, the National Governors Association, but the Council of Chief State School Officers as well. Within each state, now this is the local part of it, and I'll say quickly, I know we're on time constraint, but within each state, there are panels that are really a big cross-section of teachers and educators who are developing each state's specific standards.
And on the local versus federal question, Mike Kirst, there does seem to be, in some ways, part of what you're doing on the funding side is to sort of let schools be freer to spend money as they so choose. There's been a big push in your administration to have greater local autonomy, and yet in some ways this cuts back against that.
Well, first of all, we have changed the funding formula to have much better adjustment for student needs, which goes back to the equity argument.
Yep.
So for every low-income child or English learner child who's not low-income and foster care child, those students get more money under the new finance plan passed in 2013 than they did before. And so we have adjusted the formula for pupil needs in a significant way. The local flexibility is, we believe, with this vast, complex state, that we're not smart enough in Sacramento to tell them how to implement Common Core. So the old finance system in California was chopped up into 41 categorical programs, and we got rid of most of those. And so we feel that they need flexibility at the local level to figure out what they need to implement Common Core.
I see. So your argument is, yes, let's have a common goal, a common standard, but, you know, Albany, you go one way, Pittsburgh another, Sacramento another, and let the way that you get there be achieved at that local level.
That's right. And we did spend a lot of time in – each state had to approve these national standards. So the board adopted them, and there was, you know, quite a bit of concern and hearings about that. So all of this is being worked. These are national suggestions, the National Common Core, and each state had to approve it. And Indiana just pulled out. So states are deliberating on their own on this. This is not some national cabal foisting it on us.
Let's hear a few more of our listeners. Mitch in Felton. Just a quick observation, Mitch, please.
Hi, I'm a math intervention teacher down in Pescadero, California, at the middle school, high school there. And I wanted to talk about the technology piece, because I feel like Common Core is just a huge opportunity, first of all, For the first time, kids taking the test at the end of the year are actually taking an adaptive test, which means we're not punishing kids who are, you know, lower in the range of skills and abilities by hammering them with content we know is already way above their head. The test actually adapts to them, which is a huge step forward. I also feel like because it's pressuring schools to adopt more technology, we're going to be able to develop curriculum that is Common Core aligned and, you know, leverages that technology to do a better job at individuation. I'm actually working myself on a Common Core aligned curriculum for fourth and fifth grade that I hope to be adopted as a website.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like those opportunities, you know, whether they're capitalized effectively or not is an open question. But, you know, with all these issues of you know, the rights of the kids and trying to you know, have curriculum that really matches the needs of different groups, I think technology is going to be the window into that. But, you know,
Mitch, thank you. Thanks for adding in your perspective. Let's hear next from Sherry in San Jose. Sherry, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I'm a parent at Hammer Montessori, which is part of San Jose Unified School District. And we've been doing my teachers have been doing Common Core since this year. And just one quick example, we brought a volcano that my son made into class, and the teacher and he were discussing what type of a volcano it was. And she said to him, now please go over to the shelf and get a book to show me a reference or to back up your reasoning behind why this is. So I personally feel like that the Common Core is really going to do our children a great service to make our education a lot better.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for adding in that nice example. There's a question here about parental involvement that I'd like to get a couple of viewpoints on. Wilma writes in, I'm a grandma, retired teacher, and I'm not aware of any information that's being provided to families about how to support their children to be successful in this experience. Where is the parent involvement in all of this? Mike Kirst?
It's just beginning. She's right. She's typical. And we're aware of it. And so we have secured some funds from foundations, and not through to the state, but through nonprofits to begin to communicate to parents and to community groups. I think until it was real and we began this field test, it was a little bit abstract for parents to get into. So I think now is the moment, and we're just ramping up.
And Eric Heintz, how are you feeling now at the moment?
Well, you know, I think we need to be careful. One, on the parent involvement, you know, we're very lucky that the districts with these local control funding, you know, where the money's gone to these districts, are required now to fill up a local accountability plan, which requires parents to be part of actually building that plan. And so that should bring a lot more parents in, because that's actually part of actually getting that plan adopted and approved by the state board. But I think we need to remember that standards are not education. You know, curriculum isn't education. Testing is not education. What is education is what's happening in the classroom with the teachers. And if all we do is focus on education and not the professional development or having the right curriculum and do it all out of order, we're just going to end up in the same place where we are now, which is an inequitable system.
Yeah.
And remember that our students, and I agree with Stan on this, it's our students don't just live in school. They live in communities with infrastructure needs. And that's where we can't just let this distract us from also looking at the big picture. And that all requires resources, but we have to be intentional in how we implement it.
Let me hold you there, Eric Heintz, incoming vice president of the California Teachers Association. Kathy Barron, what are you going to be following? This is a great story to keep an eye on in the months ahead.
We're following all of the above. One big thing we're doing is the local control funding formula. We are actually going out into a number of districts to these parent meetings and reporting on what's happening.
Thanks all so much. Thanks also to Mike Kirst, president of the State Board of Education, Stan Karp, director of the Secondary Reform Project, also earlier from Kimberly Rodriguez, who joined us as well. Thanks for a fascinating conversation about a really, really important subject. We'll keep you posted and continue to report on this as well on Forum in the days and months ahead. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Danny Bringer is our engineer. Dan Zoll, our senior editor. Amanda Stupai, our engagement producer. I'm Dave Iverson. In today for Michael Krasny, this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos-Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.